Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 118, Pros Throwing to College Kids, recorded Friday, March 28th, 2014. As the roundtable takes a look at the NCAA tournament action, they wonder if they had been wrong about how bad the SEC was this year. Nick Jones and Shane Bailey discuss the effect of early season losses and what Bruce Pearl brings to Auburn. They talk about the marketing of a college quarterback with Manziel's Pro Day and discuss the National Labor Relations Board's decision in favor of Northwestern's players. All this and more on this week's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey, back for another episode right in the middle of the NCAA tourney. I was trying to get this podcast in before last night's action where we had SEC representation. Didn't make that happen. So we're doing a midday podcast in time to have festivities this evening, hopefully pleasant ones for those that are fans of the SEC and particular fans of the states of Kentucky and Tennessee. But we've had a lot that's happened over the last couple weeks since our last podcast. And if you've just joined SEC Sports Roundtable for the first time, we're a podcast that's dedicated to, of course, the SEC. So we cover football, basketball. We cover baseball at times, especially as we get closer to the dull area of, you know, spring practice is done and March Madness is over. We'll do some definite baseball talk at that point. But we are centered mostly around those three sports and heavily in basketball and football and a lot of basketball right now since we're in the heart of March Madness. But we do it from a fan's perspective. I'm a Kentucky fan. I've never been afraid to say that on the podcast, and we happily talk about that. And I've been able to take my fair share of jabs this year, as well as be able to give some things out and offer some constructive criticism for my team as well as other teams that I don't like as well. And so I try to get another fan's perspective as well. So we're not always just one-sided. And today joining me, we've got Nick Jones. He also writes for Bama Hammer. A lot of their basketball stuff Nick does. So we're glad to have Nick on. So welcome, Nick.
Shane, it's good to be here. And I hate everybody else is missing out, but, I mean, did you bring us lunch or something? I mean, it's right around that time.
I had an early day today, so I had lunch a long time ago.
I still haven't eaten lunch. I'm in this spring break mode, so I don't know what I'm going
to
do. But
well, I mean, you're a college student. It's, you know, you don't go to bed till 2 or 3 in the morning anyway, so I mean.
Shane, that doesn't fly with me. I'm up at 6:20, 6:30. I'm eating lunch by 11, in bed by 11, so.
Oh, wow. What a studious person you are. I was never that kid in college. And so
I just can't do it. I can't do it.
I'm that way today. I've got with two small kids, it's definitely routine for me. I don't see 11 o'clock very often any longer. But let's talk a little bit about the SEC tournament. And we're not going to spend a whole lot of time since that was, you know, basically. I'm sorry, we did cover the SEC tournament. I'm losing my brain. The first week's action. In March Madness. That's what I wanted to get hit on because we didn't get a podcast in before that started and after it ended. And we're already just now into, I can't keep the round straight. We're off one. So it's round five, right?
Let's see.
You got one.
Yes.
No, four.
One, two, three, four.
It's four.
The 1-2 of one last night are now into the fifth round.
So
there's
some that are already in five. So we'll say that.
Yeah.
That just when they added the play-in games and made that a round, that's just thrown all my math off.
I mean, why can't we just call that the play-in round or something? You know, I just don't understand either, but whatever.
It's inclusion. You know, that's the buzzword.
Yeah.
And so we've got to include everyone. There's no losers in this world, so they get to play round one.
That's true.
But you know, I actually went out and did a blog post this week about rounds one, two, and three. and the SEC's performance. And I'd like to get your take. I don't know if you were able to go out there and read that or not.
Yeah, and Shane, I did. And, you know, I feel like we've been on some mountains and we've been down in the valley even like the past couple months. You know, I remember vividly just a couple, probably a month or two ago, we were on here talking about Tennessee, you know, firing Cuozzo to get Bruce Pearl back. Yeah. And now, yeah, I mean, essentially Tennessee's one game away from the Elite Eight, and who knows? I mean, Final Four even. I mean, so.
Yeah, and for those that haven't checked out the blog post, it's out. It's up at secsrt.com. But what I kind of alluded to, and we've done this podcast after podcast for the whole, you know, 2014, we've talked about how bad the play was in the SEC. And, you know, me and we made a decision to not even do weekly podcasts because we thought that the play was so bad in the SEC. And it turns around that, you know, three teams that made the NCAA are in the Sweet 16. One of them last night made it to the round of eight. You know, if you look at the statistics, was that around 27% of, you know, your Sweet 6 teams are represented from one conference that's supposedly the weakest major conference out there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my question I posed was the SEC really that bad? Was the play as bad as we all were giving them credit for? Or was there just a lot of good teams? Because let's face it, you can't be a great team unless you're playing good teams. If you play bad teams, your level of competition at some point is going to catch up to you. I think that happened with Wichita State. They played the best they could possibly play last Sunday against Kentucky, and it still wasn't good enough. And they were the number one seed in that bracket, and some thought that they might even deserve to be a number one overall seed above Florida. But when it came down to you put everything, lay all the chips out on the table, everything they put into it, and you can't take anything away from the game that Wichita State played. It was an incredible game they played. It still wasn't good enough to beat a Kentucky program that might have, I didn't even look, but they might have fallen out of the top 25 towards the end of the season. I know they were teetering the way they performed there at the end, and had losses to Florida three times. You know, so what does that say about the level of play in the SEC? Was I off base for that theory?
No, I think you're absolutely right, and I think we were kind of blindsided a little bit, and especially from my perspective, and I know Blair as well. You know, and I posed the same question that you're essentially asking right now, you know, when we were going into the tournament with Florida. I was saying, you know, Florida is a great team. They've got all this senior leadership. We know what they can play. I mean, they matched up with a great Kentucky team that looks even better today than they did back in January, I think, when they played that first time. And
oh, they got destroyed the first time.
Yeah. And, you know, we saw that, and that's one of the reasons that we kept talking about how bad the SEC was and how down they were, is because we were seeing a great Florida team run through, you know, this Kentucky team who was supposed to be like a top 15 team, a top 10 team.
Preseason number one?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that brought us down, and it's kind of a what have you done for us lately. But, Shane, I think you're absolutely right, and bringing up Wichita State was a really good thing is – in the SEC this year, we saw essentially one team that jumped out, you know, just ran the table. You've got Kentucky right behind them. They proved that in the SEC conference championship game that they were pretty evenly matched. And I think I didn't really give Kentucky enough credit going into the tournament, you know, by the way that they played in the championship game, because it was even surprising to me how well they played against Wichita State. I mean, I think we're seeing them gel at the perfect time, which has kind of been an issue for Calipari the past couple of years. But to essentially address your blog post, I think you're exactly right, is although we only had two teams really running the table, you've got Tennessee who has all – I mean, they just have everything you need to make a tournament run, and we're seeing that. They've got great shooters. They've got two amazing inside scorers, probably one of the – best raw rebounders in the tournament right now in Jarnell Stokes. I mean, when he is on, when he's playing at full potential, and when he is just giving 100% effort, there's nobody that's going to stop him. I mean, he's a little undersized, I think 6'9", but, you know, He's got the will. He's got the muscle. But I think we fell victim to having some of the teams that we expect to make a run, at least in the conference tournament and not in the NCAA tournament, like Alabama, like Ole Miss, like Vandy, like Mississippi State. Really, all four of those
Arkansas.
Teams were absent. Arkansas as well. They fell late.
Georgia. Georgia turned on. I mean, that's seven. Did we just name six or seven teams right there?
Yeah. And I think that's the issue is I think we weren't really giving – I don't know if – because I'm not sure how much credit we can give Alabama or a team like that who just sputtered all year. But, you know, Alabama's product on the floor and the talent they had on that floor was way better than – the record that they had. I mean, they played Florida and held them. I think Florida never held a double-digit lead in their first matchup, and I think Alabama lost by eight. I mean, you know, what I'm telling you is essentially Florida was tested. Florida and Kentucky were tested all year long. They didn't lose too many of those games, but there was some solid talent in the SEC that just couldn't make it up to that next level. And even Tennessee couldn't do it in the regular season, but now, I mean, hey, they're obviously – on the verge of making it to the Elite Eight.
I mean, we're giving Kentucky a lot of credit. And, of course, I'm going to be a little biased in my theory as to why. But you walk in with so much talent, so you're expected to do well. But realistically, if you want to take a look at a snapshot of Kentucky's basketball program this year, it's like almost every other team in the SEC. They struggled early in the season. They struggled midway through the season. Finally are starting to get things together, gelling as a team, becoming one really strong program. Well, that's the same thing that's happened with Tennessee. That's the same thing that's happened with a couple of other teams inside the SEC that did not make the tournament. You see that improvement. Are we giving too much weight at this point in time to early season losses to bad programs?
I think we are.
Because, I mean, if you want to hear the knock on any team that didn't make it in the SEC to make it to the tournament, that was their knock.
Yeah.
They had bad out-of-conference losses. But my point to that is out-of-conference losses happened before January. There's a lot that gets improved on before then. And so I think they put too much weight into that.
Yeah, and, you know, Anthony Grant spoke a lot about this, Alabama's scheduling team, the rest of the athletic department. They attempted, and they put an all-hands-on-deck effort to not allow this to happen, because if you remember in the past, Alabama's been a 20-plus win team and have been snubbed from the NCAA tournament two out of the past 4 years, and that other year they did make that tournament under Anthony Grant. And so Alabama made a proactive effort to go out and schedule some great teams in non-conference. I mean, Alabama played Duke. They played Wichita State before we really knew who Wichita State was. And, you know, at the end of the season, at the end of the regular season, Alabama was sitting with a, you know, number two strength of schedule after playing all these teams, and especially in the tournament that they were in early in the year. But where did that get them, right? Alabama was a little below all these other teams, so they racked up all these losses, and that's really the last thing Alabama needed.
Still on the outside looking in.
Tournament. Yeah.
It didn't help them. You know,
it didn't at all.
And
I mean,
you're
if you
right.
can't win those games, it doesn't help you. So.
I remember that was Alabama's knock. Was, you know, their out of conference schedule was weak.
Yeah.
You know, well, you go and strengthen that, and you lose some of those, and now you're punished. You can't win. I think there's been more parity this year in the tournament than I can recall, and I think that's going to be the standard from here on out. It is that more parity. I mean, we've got two teams right now that are 11 seeds. One of them won last night in Dayton. Tennessee definitely did not deserve to be an 11 seed.
Yeah.
If you look at how well they were playing coming into it. But, you know, that's what they were put at. So if they make it, that will be the sixth and seventh team to be an 11th seed to make it to the round of eight. That's some ridiculous statistics to have two of them to go to the Elite Eight. And that's kind of giving you a glimpse of the parity, because was it Florida Gulf Coast a couple years ago?
I think VCU was an 11th seed.
VCU. Thinking of all these different teams that have made these runs in the last 5 to 7 years, and it's going to be it's going to take less for those programs because you're able to balance it out by getting one or two really good players a year. You know, you do the math. If you get three stars or four star players a year, you get two of those. Well, at the end of 4 years, that's eight players. How many players do you need to play it in a game? You know, Kentucky sometimes plays seven. You know, so you're nice. It's nice to have that eighth or ninth for depth. There's nobody like Dayton that plays 12. So, you know, you can get a really strong program that's gonna have senior leadership, that's gonna have upperclassmen that are gonna be able to stay those 3 and 4 years, and all of a sudden they can compete. And that formula is working in the NCAA. It's able to compete against Kansas, who got knocked out with the freshman phenom. Duke got knocked out with the freshman phenom. The only one left out of that bunch is Kentucky, and they've got five of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's an argument to say that there's more parity in basketball, and that's going to be an interesting thing as this all moves forward with all the NCAA turmoil that's going on. We can talk about the Labor Relations Board and the unionization of Northwestern, but there's a definite divide between the haves and have-nots in football. But you do not have that necessarily in basketball.
Yeah, and exactly. And, I mean, I think you're exactly right. But, you know, just for instance, I mean, this is a team that I know. UAB with Jared Haas, it's a guy that's been on Roy Williams' staff, and I think as well as Bill Self's staff. And I think the big thing that you're seeing with some of these smaller schools, you know, not in the power conferences, is they get players to stick around, they recruit a little bit better than most people give them credit, and then they also have a definitive aspect to their team. Jared Haas, one of his defining aspects, his defining things about him is he's that run-and-gun style offense. You know, he's taken that from UNC and Kansas. You look at the guys at Dayton, like you said, they're spreading it out. They've got 12 guys that are playing. They play great defense. They're efficient on offense. The same way with VCU and Shaka Smart, you know, a couple of years ago. And even Wichita State. I mean, that was a heck of a team. I mean, they had a couple of senior guys. They played lights out on defense, and they could shoot, you know. I mean, they just fell victim to a Kentucky team that was more talented. But I think you're right. And that's the thing. And I know we've talked about this ad nauseum at some point, but, you know, in basketball, you only got to field five guys. You don't have to go out there and field 22. And it's a lot easier to recruit guys, you know. And that's another thing is the junior college game, the junior college spectrum, I guess you would say, is alive and well in basketball as well. And it works even better, I think, in some aspects than football. I mean, you know, there are the Cam Newtons, the Nick Marshalls, the Nick Fairleys of the world.
Yeah, but you're naming people that really got in trouble, and that's
exactly
why they had to go to junior college. It wasn't a great issue. That's generally what you find in basketball, is it's not a disciplinary action or it's they did something wrong. It's they didn't have the grades to get to the other level.
Yeah, they're D1 players. They just can't make that. You know, all the rest of the guys that we're naming that have been SEC greats in football, they've, you know, a couple of them were at SEC schools already, like Nick Marshall and Cam Newton. But that parity, I think we've really seen that, and maybe we've ignored it in the past couple of years with VCU and all of these teams. Butler, you know, I think Butler made a push to the championship not too long ago.
Yeah,
and I think we've seen this build.
Well, they were in the Sweet 16 this year.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're in a major conference, so, I mean, you got – that's a little different for Baylor.
Yeah. But, I mean, all these teams, I mean, we're seeing how easy it is to resurrect a program or even bring a program where they've never been before.
You bring up an interesting point, and I've thought this, and I've not heard anybody say this. They all keep saying that Auburn's 2 or 3 years away under Bruce Pearl, and we haven't talked about that since the last podcast, the hiring. I mean, we said it could happen. We didn't know if it would happen. None of us thought it would happen so quickly that there was that opportunity for him to go there. But I'm like you. It can happen so fast. That turnaround can happen so fast in college basketball. What's to say Bruce Pearl's not going to get two JUCO transfers, and all of a sudden this is a completely different Auburn team that comes out next year, and they're tournament ready. That's a possibility, and no one's giving him credit for that because all they're thinking about is he's not going to be able to recruit for this year. He's recruiting for next year. It's not too late to get some JUCO guys in here. And who's the cat that's over that was over the rules that when Bruce Pearl got suspended? He's at Auburn now. Dietrich, or what's his last name?
That sounds right. What position is he at?
He's the rules enforcement.
I'm not sure about that.
The gentleman that basically handed out the suspension and show cause to Bruce Pearl for the NCAA now works for Auburn. He has 30 days to appeal. You don't think he doesn't know how to write the appeal to let him be able to recruit faster than August?
Yeah.
I mean, look for that to occur any time now. So I just don't see that everybody's talking about how Auburn still might not be relevant next year. And I'm here to tell you that don't count your chickens so fast, because there's a couple that might get out of that hen house, and all of a sudden Bruce Pearl's a guy to worry about in the SEC. I don't think he can contend for the championship, but he's definitely can build a tournament-ready program.
Yeah, and I think next year is going to be huge, laying the groundwork. You know, this summer, the rest of this year leading up to next season's basketball tournament is going to be Bruce Pearl's time to define his program. You know, Tony Barbie, they were just lackadaisical. You know, you just look at all the things that Auburn basketball stands for, and it really stands for nothing. You know, I mean, I can't even tell you, other than Charles Barkley, you know, three good players to come out of there. And it's not even really about recruiting. Like you said, he's going to go handpick a couple guys that aren't even on anybody's radar right now who can play. And, you know, I mean, I'm the 2 to 3 year thing, I mean, maybe in football, but not in basketball. I can see them maybe going, you know, 15 or 16 wins next year. And that, not even to limit them at that, they could be a 20-win program depending on how the SEC plays.
Look at Cal coming into Kentucky when he left Memphis. He left Memphis, what, in April?
It was pretty late, yeah.
April, I mean, it was after the season when he came to Kentucky. Almost all those recruits he got, I mean, he took a couple from Memphis.
Yeah,
it's easily, and all of a sudden Kentucky was a contender. I think people have given them Bruce Pearl too much weight to say that he couldn't do it sooner than later. And I think Bruce Pearl's happy with that. That takes all the pressure in the world off of him to do that. But for him to come in and make a splash all of a sudden, bring in a couple of guys, I think he's made Auburn a relevant program. And more than just the excitement he brings, I think realistically now you're looking at a fourth team that can always be competing for an NCAA tournament bid. Now all of a sudden you get Vanderbilt. If you can get those guys healthy and build them up a little bit, they can contend. Arkansas, if they can ever win on the road, can contend. Yeah. Georgia didn't have a bad team this year. LSU didn't have a bad team this year. Now all of a sudden you're looking at 6-7 teams, but it's going to take them to – I don't know. It's going to have to take a shift in thinking – looking at early season versus late in the season, because teams grow, and Kentucky got too much credit at the beginning of the season and got too much credit at the end of the season, because there was a stretch in there where they weren't that good. And so Kentucky had the benefit of being Kentucky, or you wouldn't be talking about them the way you are and the way we are. But at the end of the season, they're where everyone thought they should be playing, at least at the level they should be playing, not what seed they should be playing, but the type of ball that they should be playing. That's what you're seeing right now to Kentucky. And there's other programs that are doing that right now in the SEC, and right now they're not really playing basketball.
Yeah, and not to open a can of worms, and I don't really want us to go down this topic, but you have to realize, I mean, now that we have this playoff system, we're going to have to deal with stuff like this with a selection committee. I mean, now, granted, it's only four teams, but this is what I've been preaching to people for years. If you have a selection committee, we have what we wanted. We wanted a playoff. Well, now you're going to have people, actual people, sitting in a room. Yeah, and that makes a lot more people, makes a lot of fans more comfortable, you know, that it's actual living, breathing people instead of the magical VCS computer sitting there. But at the same time, I mean, our human minds, these things, these preconceived notions that people have, I mean, that could keep an SEC team out of this football thing. And, not to bring us – I know we've got plenty of other things to talk about. But like you're saying, is that early season schedule, that completely has shaped – I mean, it killed Alabama's season this year. I mean, I'm not telling you that we would have made the tournament, but I'm telling you we wouldn't have had the worst season in 45 years record-wise. And then, I don't know, it brings a lot of, I guess, unwanted politics or something into it. But you're right. I mean, that's scary to think about, or not scary. It's awesome as an SEC fan, but for the rest of the nation, for Alabama or for the SEC to turn from a three-team league in the NCAA tournament this year, barely getting Tennessee in that play-in game, to now having six or seven teams that have a shot of making it, and even more, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, and I'm stepping out on a limb with some of those teams, but you definitely could see. Five with Vanderbilt can always be in the mix, and I think they would have been in the mix if they were healthy. So you have Vanderbilt, and you bring Auburn in the discussion. Now you're looking at five potential teams, and let's face it, Arkansas, if they would have won a couple road games, would have been in the conversation.
Oh yeah, I mean they played their way out, no doubt. I mean they didn't have anything to do if they wouldn't have lost to Alabama. They wouldn't have lost some of those other games.
So you realistically had six teams right there, that can be in next year. It's an interesting thought to think about that, but we're not that far away from being able to double the amount of teams in the SEC, making it to the NCAA tournament. And looking at the play of the first two rounds, or at least for the first round, definitely, three or four of the teams that didn't make it in the tournament from the SEC probably could have won a game.
Yeah, they really could have. And some of these teams that you're seeing get in here, and I know it has to do with automatic bids and everything like that, but there's a lot of talent in the SEC sitting at home that, like you said, could have knocked off a couple of these teams. And I'm talking about higher seeded teams as well. I'm talking about five or six seeds. I'm not talking about, starting at 16 and saying, Georgia and Arkansas could have beaten a Manhattan or something. But, I don't know.
No, you're right. Yeah, that's definitely – you have to look at it that way as well, because you're not going to have an Alabama go up against a 16 seed. You're going to
exactly.
They're going to be a 11, 12, 13, 14 seed type situation for those programs. And what would they have been placing? What would they have been up against? And could they win some of those games? I think definitely there was a couple of matchups that could have worked in their favor. So it's interesting, and it's a complete 180 from the stance I've been taking for the last 6 to 8 weeks on the product in the SEC, talking about how bad it was. But just seeing three teams make it to the tournament and their performance and what they were able to do, and some of the teams that beat those teams, some of the teams that beat Tennessee, and some of the teams that beat Kentucky, they're sitting at home right now. I can't say that about Florida because they didn't let anybody beat them. That's how you definitely prove that you belong. But, we talked about how bad it was, and I could have been wrong. I don't know.
I'm not going to sit here and say, Shane, you were wrong, because I was wrong too.
Yeah.
I mean, we were all wrong. That's all we talked about. And I remember clearly 3 weeks ago when I don't listen to Feinbaum that much, but he was calling out, I think his name is Mark Whitworth, who is the associate commissioner in the SEC that's over basketball. And he's sitting there talking to millions of people, telling them that Mark Whitworth needs to make a change, that something has to happen, because the SEC has fallen from being a top three or top four basketball conference. Heck, a couple years ago, even number one when we had Florida and Kentucky running the table. And now, they're not even relevant. Now we can barely even get three teams into the tournament. Well, now we're sitting pretty – with a team that's already advanced to the Elite Eight, Kentucky, and the other two teams, it's not like we're sitting here saying that they could lose. I mean, they're going to lose. You know what I mean? Like,
they can win. Doesn't mean they're going to.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. If we were sitting here saying, well, Tennessee's doomed tonight, they're not going to be able to win. That's not what we're saying. Both of these teams, Kentucky and Tennessee, I mean, we could look up tomorrow and they could be in the Elite Eight. I mean, it would not shock me.
We could look up and they could be packing too. I know Louisville fans, they're holding a grudge over the Kentucky win because all of a sudden Kentucky turned around and lost some games they shouldn't have after that. So So for Louisville, that was a big stinger. And being in-state rivals, being just a couple hours away up in Indianapolis. And that's another thing that I find kind of humorous is that, and it's not just because I live in Nashville, but every national radio I've listened to and local sports, Florida's getting zero love. I mean, all the talk has been about how great the games are going to be tonight, Friday, in Indianapolis because of Kentucky and Louisville and Michigan and Tennessee. It wasn't anything at all about how good Florida is or what kind of game they're going to have. You saw very little, you heard very little talk about that whole game, about their matchups. Everything was centered around this game, the two games tonight.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. I mean, you know, we struggle with this in football as well. You know, we sit here, and I know not the rest of the nation doesn't want to hear about how good Alabama is year in and year out, you know, when they're preseason number one or whatever. But I think Florida's kind of falling victim to that, and it's so weird because it's not like that they have this long pedigree of being a top program, you know, the last year or two. Like, I'm talking about, like, Alabama. It's not like Florida was the preseason number one. But in the past week, or not even that, really all season, Florida hasn't been the team to talk about. You know, you don't sit here and, like you said, national radio, Sports Center, anywhere like that, they're not talking about Patrick Young and Scotty Wilbekin. You know, they're talking about, you know, the teams that are flashy. They're talking about Dayton. They're talking about Kansas, all these teams. And, you know, you look up now and half the teams they were talking about 2 weeks ago are out of the tournament.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. Let's switch gears for a second. We've hit on football a little bit already just through our conversations, but Pro Day was yesterday for Johnny Football. Did you catch any of that? ESPN broadcasts a Pro Day?
You know, I didn't see it live, but I did see all the tweets. You know, supposedly he was wearing pads and a helmet in typical Johnny Football style, kind of blazing the trail for others, I guess. But I don't know. Seems like he did pretty well.
What do you think of Pro Days?
Yeah, I don't know. You see these guys that opt to either, especially quarterbacks, I guess we'll hound on quarterbacks a little bit, but you see guys that opt to either not throw at the combine or not throw at Pro Day, depending on how they do, you know, either way. And I think Pro Days hold, I guess, a little bit of kind of a backup role. You know, if you have a good combine, I'm not sure that you're going to be really sitting there wanting to, you know, display your talents at Pro Day as well. But at the same time, if you get somebody who laid an egg, like Michael Sam, for instance, I mean, that was big in, you know, big in the news. He didn't have a great combine. Well, now you got Bridgewater as well. And you just see all these guys. And I don't know. And I think it's two different settings because you got A.J. McCarron over here that's throwing to three of his favorite targets at Pro Day, you know, but at the combine, he's having to throw to, you know, Benjamin and all these other guys that, you know, he's never thrown to before. So I guess as a scout, it gives you kind of the polar opposites of, I guess, how non-game action could work. But I don't know. I mean, it does seem kind of repetitive to me doing the same drills twice, you know.
I think it's a media circus. I think it's a marketing event. If you do what you're supposed to do, I mean, Bridgewater was the exception to this role, but, you know, Bortles did well in his. Manziel did well in his. And so all it is a marketing opportunity to get your name out there, to keep your name relevant in the conversation. I don't think it proves anything.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, everything's scripted. I like the idea that he came out in pads and a helmet. I, you know, at least that lets you. Let's face it; it is different throwing a football in pads and a helmet than it is without. So,
oh, yeah.
So that raised the bar and stakes a little bit. And
on the marketing aspect too, I mean, I kind of see this. You know, I was watching back when I was in Tuscaloosa. You know, they had Pro Day it was about a week or two ago. And ESPN was down there, I forget, I think it was Hartung or something, they sent one of their reporters, I don't know if it was, anyway, it doesn't matter, it was one of their sideline reporters. And it's like you said, it's a huge media event, but it's also kind of, and this just popped in my head, it's kind of a last ditch brand association effort for Alabama, for all these schools. You know, you see Blake Bortles opting to go with the UCF logo one more time. It's kind of like this last time that, you know, A.J. McCarron is going to be Alabama quarterback A.J. McCarron. In another month, he's going to be, you know, Dallas Cowboys quarterback or whoever drafts him. The same way with Manziel. You're still at the Texas A&M.
So you don't want, you want me to not like McCarron's what you're telling me?
No. We've just heard some rumors that the Cowboys really want him. I mean, I'm not a Cowboys fan, so that would not be good for me.
Insert a different team there, please. Whew.
But anyway, but I mean, I think it is. You know, they bring, you know, some of the former players up there. I mean, you've got Mark Ingram and some of these guys watching Pro Day. And then, you know, you get that interview with Saban, too. So I think at the same time, you know, we saw Johnny Manziel yesterday, and this was kind of like a classic Darren Revelle tweet, but Darren Revelle tweeted out, you know, that Nike was already selling some official Johnny Manziel, you know, stuff that he wore at Pro Day on their website. Well, it's the same thing. I mean, I think it's the last time that Texas A&M gets that midfield logo, you know, under Johnny Manziel when he's throwing a football.
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you don't have to throw to current players at your program.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because I remember, I think Jay Cutler came back to Earl Bennett's Pro Day at Vanderbilt to throw to him. You know.
Yeah, and I think a guy that was there a couple years ago, Marquise Mays, a guy that failed to make an NFL roster, came back and worked out with A.J. McCarron. And A.J. McCarron also had his favorite target, you know, over the years, Norwood. He's coming out in the same draft class, so that was kind of cool. You got to see, you know, one of the better quarterbacks in the draft class throwing to a wide receiver who's trying to make a name for himself. But you're right. I mean, they can pick whoever they want. I mean, if they could get a bunch of NFL guys to come down here, I'm sure they'd love that as well.
Yeah, that shouldn't be that hard, as many of them as they have in the program right now.
Yeah.
What else is on your mind?
You know, I've been thinking about this, and I know you've got the Northwestern thing on the docket, and we can move to that as well, but there's just so much conversation about this paying players deal, and we've talked about it before, and I have my stances on it, and it's really changed as a college student as well. You know, being there, I mean, sure, you know, let me think of, I don't know who one of my counterparts, we'll just say A'shaun Robinson, for instance, led Alabama in tackles for a loss. One of the top defensive linemen, freshman in the country for Alabama, playing defensive tackle. Well, you know, me and him are the same age. We're taking the same classes. You know, in the college student's mind, we're the same person. You know, on a statistic, in an enrollment statistic, me and A'shaun Robinson and I are the same person. But, you know, that has changed my view a lot of how paying players and all this stuff works. And, you know, not to get into that too much, but a lot of people believe that this Northwestern players union thing that got passed yesterday or was able to happen, whatever, I guess maybe you have the details a little bit on that, is just another step, you know, towards this paying players deal that, I mean, nobody will shut up about it. I mean, it's, you know, it's March and we're talking about this. This was the lead story on SportsCenter yesterday, you know.
I think the main difference in my eyes, being a previous college student, is and looking at it, is that I got to go work full time. You know, the football player didn't have that opportunity.
Yeah.
So they're limited in where they can get their funds. Some booster can't slip them $100 to take somebody out on a date, legally. But you know, so they can't really go out and earn that income to help support and do some things. And Bill King, I generally like what he talks about. I was coming home today, and he goes on a rant about how he's on the opposite end. He is not for paying players at all, no way, shape, or form. And then he starts getting on this soapbox about a Pell Grant. Well, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it doesn't take a lot of money to make you ineligible to receive a Pell Grant, which is free money the government gives you to go to school for any reason. You got to be in the poverty level almost to do that. And it takes your parents' income into account up into the age of like 25 or something like that. I don't know. I don't do FAFSAs and fill out financial aid forms, but I remember that I didn't come from a very wealthy family, but we made enough money. We didn't qualify for Pell Grants. And so he's saying, well, you know, these players can go get all this free money. Well, they can't go get this free money. Yeah. They can't go get a job. Now, what is interesting is what this NLRB is really posing is all the roadblocks and obstacles that something like this might create, the different taxation that each state has, how one player is going to get taxed on this versus another. That's where if you go into actually paying a employee of a university, it becomes an issue. I never thought that should be the way it would go. I think it needs to be some sort of stipend type of program where it's included in your scholarship. You get X amount of dollars for ancillary things, and whether that's discretionary. You get to choose how you want to spend that money. That way you don't have that taxation issue. But now you're talking about the employee side of it. And where I understand and I can side with these individuals is that they need some sort of protection from the healthcare side, because if they get injured, what was that Rutgers player? You know, he's now paralyzed. He was an NFL.
Erico Grand.
He was an NFL prospect.
Yeah.
His life and career is completely changed because he was sacrificing to go play college football at Rutgers. So is it wrong to say that the university needs to take care of him, or some player that doesn't make it to the NFL, but they're in their 40s and they're suffering from concussion syndrome? Well, it didn't happen because he was sitting at a desk looking at financial reports all day. It happened when he was 22 years old, hitting pads in the middle of the summer and in the fall for the college he played for. He needed to be taken care of. That's where I think, and I think that's where this has started. But unfortunately, this might create a steamroll effect that's going to have consequences that nobody were intended. But that's my side of it, is that I think they need to receive some sort of money in addition to their scholarship, because they don't have the opportunity to go out and work. If they were afforded that opportunity and they chose not to, it's another thing, but they don't get the time to be able to go do that. So give them a stipend. That way it's not taxed. They're not being paid. They're not employees of the university. But there also needs to be something in place, I think, in my opinion, to cover them from a health standpoint.
And I do not disagree with that at all. I've always been on the kind of opposite side, and I think you are as well. I think you're strongly opposed to any sort of employee, you know, worker, I guess, partnership or something like that. I mean, I think we both agree that's not the way to go about it.
Well, now all of a sudden, Tennessee becomes a more attractive place to come play for because we don't have a state income tax.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're going to base your decision on where you go to school based on the income tax because that can be, you know, 15-20% of your income that you're going to be earned as an employee of the school for playing whatever sport. I don't like the employee idea, and I don't like labor unions. I don't like unions in general. I know they served a valuable place in our history, but there's kind of a point in time where they're bloated and they don't do what they're intended to do any longer. That's my opinion. And if there's an auto worker out here that's mad at me right now, you know, so what? My mom was a union worker, and I don't think there needs to be a union. And so having a union for players to give them protection, I don't know if that's the right angle for these college kids.
And I'm going to be the first one to admit that I'm extremely ignorant on this topic, but you know, when you're ignorant, you can always go find somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Don't look at me.
Do what?
Don't look at me.
Yeah. I'm gonna point you guys to Shane, you may follow this guy or not, but it's John_Infante on Twitter, and he runs a site called athleticscholarships.net. And I mean, I've been following him for a couple of years now, and anytime something like this comes up, he's really the first and kind of the authoritative figure on how taxes and all this stuff would come to play. But he's also very vocal and very helpful on what players get for a scholarship. They actually put a dollar amount on how much that scholarship means per year. And that's hard because a lot of these things that they get, whether you factor in brand recognition or if you go to a school that's Nike or Adidas, all these different pieces of articles of clothing you get. And I mean, it just spans – a lot of people don't realize what an athletic scholarship actually gives you at one of these top programs.
Suits but, to wear for oh, yeah. game days.
And we're talking, I mean, just for Alabama, for example, and I know a lot of people don't want to talk about this, but I can attest to you that players, they have a different dining plan that you can't even purchase it. They eat at night at a place that would cost us essentially double the price besides what we pay for a swipe. You have to pay $10 extra. So that's a $15 meal they get every single night that a normal non-athletic person can't get for the same price. And all these things. I mean, it's just things that the average Joe doesn't know about. And as a matter of fact, I didn't know about it before I went to college. And John is very good at athleticscholarships.net on sorting through that information and how it relates to not only tax law, but NCAA regulations and just all this stuff that, I mean, if you don't do it for a living, there's just no way you could keep up with it. And John's just a great authority on that. So if you want to read more, if you want to get kind of to this deeper level besides just the headlines, John's your guy.
Perfect. That's going to be – I'm going to have to check him out. I've not followed him.
Yeah. But anyway.
All right. Well, now that I know I can't run for office on a Democratic platform.
Yeah, you've ruined that, Shane. So.
Dang it, I'm a Democrat. For a lot of things. There's a lot of things I'm not, though, I guess, as evidenced by my stance here on my thoughts on unions. Anyways, anything else before we close up shop today?
Yeah, not really. I mean, obviously, I'm sure a lot of the listeners can tell by the tone in our voices even that just what – I mean, yeah, I think we've even said this before, but winning fixes everything. You know, 2 weeks ago we were talking about how down we were about SEC basketball, and, you know, as much as – you or I really don't, I guess, just wake up every morning to talk about SEC baseball, which I love, but you know, I know some of the listeners may not like that. We were kind of looking for something else to talk about besides basketball because we thought this tournament was going to be pretty hard and, you know, kind of painful, except for Florida maybe. But look up, you know, a week later, and we've got three teams in here that are, you know, could be in the top eight in the nation. So winning fixes everything. I guess that's my thesis for today.
It's a good one to have because you're right. We were thinking of a lot of early exits, you know, a week or so ago before this tournament started, and it's not looking that way. So, folks, if they want to catch you, you still do some writing, correct?
Yep, over at BamaHammer.com. We're in full spring practice mode right now. Alabama hits the turf nearly every day here for another month or two, and then we've got the spring game coming up, and any breaking news you need to follow, I've got baseball coverage as well, just anything. We've got several guys over there, including Tony, our editor, who pour a lot of their life into the site, and I know a lot of you guys don't even care about that, but a lot of work we do, and you know, we hope that if you're an Alabama fan or even an SEC fan in general, that you can enjoy some of our content.
Awesome, and you're on Twitter as well, right?
Yep, twitter.com/thatnickjones if you want to get some rants or pictures or, I don't know, that's kind of a hodgepodge, but you get what you pay for, I guess.
There we go. And you can follow me at P. Shane Bailey if you wish to do so, or follow SEC SRT anywhere, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest. I haven't put anything out on Pinterest in a while. A lot of good drink recipes and tailgating recipes are up there, though.
Yep.
We do have a website, SEC SRT, so lots of ways to follow, join, subscribe, and let us know what you think. If you listen to this all the way through and you hear that, we'd love to know what you thought of the podcast, good or bad, what you'd like to see different. We'd love to know those things as well. And with that, we're going to call this podcast done.